Money, Riches, and Wealth is sponsored by the Financial Consulate. Say you don't need no diamond rings, and I'll be satisfied. Tell me that you want the kind of things the money just can't buy. I don't care too much for money. Money can buy me love. This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
And this is Drew Tignanelli here with Money, Riches, and Wealth, here with Mickey P. McCarthy.
Good evening, sir.
How are you?
I'm doing lovely. The sky, the weather is beautiful.
That's good. I've heard it's been raining like all get out up there.
Yeah, you know, the rain makes grains, and grain makes whiskey.
There you go.
Whatever there's
I've
a song
that.
About that.
I've heard that song. Yeah. Neither of us know who sung it or anything, but we know the song to some degree.
Yeah, we've heard it.
We're on an open show, Mikey, and so that means that our listeners are our guests, and they get to ask the questions. They get to determine what they want to ask and have the conversation go in that direction. And maybe you're out there thinking, hey, you know, if you answered this question for me, that would be very helpful. And as I say many times, that there's about 10, 15 other people out there listening who say, wow, I would love to hear that question answered also, but I'm not going to call in. So if you call in, you're not only doing yourself a favor, but many other people. 410-922-6680. 410-922-6680 if you want to call in and direct the conversation in your area, your topic that you're interested in. And as we always say, the people that call in early, they get the most time because, you know, what happens is people start listening more and they start getting the courage up to call. They finally call and then boom, four other people call in with them. So, you know, those that call in early, 410-922-6680, they get the most attention. You were going to say something, Mickey, and I'm not going to hold you back because
right.
You're bigger than I am,
that's
even
true.
Though you're 600 miles away.
It's true, but I'm bigger, even bigger on the screen in front of you.
That's
so.
True. Go ahead.
Well, I was just thinking, so you were talking about how our listeners direct the show and our listeners inspire the ideas, but also sometimes the clients at our firm and the questions they ask help spur ideas for times like right now when that first caller is waiting to get the most time. And you've been getting a lot of calls on a specific IRS form that gets sent out.
Yeah, Form 5498, I'm betting many of you, you may not even noticed it, but you got a tax form in the last month or two at the most, and it was after tax season ended, and it had looked like a very official tax form, and you're thinking to yourself, well, you know, why are they sending it to me late? I better get this to my accountant. And so I've probably gotten 5, 10, something like that, different people sending it to me, telling me, oh, man, this is really late. I hope it doesn't, you know, mess up my tax return, et cetera, et cetera. Well, the issue is the 5498 is just an information-only form. And what do I mean by that? I mean that Schwab is required by the IRS to send 5498 talking about what contributions you made to an IRA or a Roth. What rollovers did you do? What conversions did you do? What was the fair market value of your IRAs and Roths and so forth? So it's strictly an information form. You say, well, why do they send that to the IRS? Well, the answer is that the IRS uses that to audit your tax returns. They use it to audit your return to determine whether or not you made your Roth contribution rightly, or whether you made an IRA contribution correctly, or whether you did a rollover, or, you know, you didn't do a rollover. Because, you see, on the information on your tax return, they've got computer algorithms that match it up with it. So I'll give you an example, okay? So let's say you did a deductible IRA contribution, okay? What the IRS is going to look at is they're going to have an algorithm that says, look at their W-2 and see if in box 13 they have an X on it. And the computer will say, yep, they got an X on it. Okay, go back to their tax return and tell me what their adjusted gross income was. Was it over, were they single? Was it over this? Or was it married over this? And if it was, then send them a letter immediately and tell them that they made an IRA deductible contribution that wasn't valid. And so
and that's always right, right?
Well, it's not always right, but it's the computer algorithm's pretty pretty accurate. It's not perfect, but it's pretty accurate. And so that's what the form is all about. And anytime that a custodian sends information to the IRS, the Information Act, which was passed, I think, 30 years ago, says that the custodian always must tell you what they told the IRS.
Now, I was trying to set you up for this one, but...
I didn't do a good job.
Well, you didn't go where I was trying to lead you. I threw my rod out there, my bait out there, and he didn't take it. So they use the 5498 as part of the audit process, and one of the common letters that a taxpayer may get if the IRS thinks they found something wrong is a CP2000 or similar letter. And, Drew, if our listeners get one of these letters that the IRS says, hey, you did your taxes wrong and you owe us this money, should they just write them a check and call it a day?
Well, what they should do is take a baseball bat and start beating themselves in the head, because dealing with the IRS today is an absolute impossible task. But your answer to your question is, Mike, no, you shouldn't. You should try to do thorough research to make sure, is the IRS correct or are they incorrect? And if they're incorrect, you need to defend yourself aggressively, sending them letters, trying to call them. But, you know, I've been trying to call the IRS, and my success rate used to be 100%. When I call the IRS, I get through 100% of the time. Today, I'm lucky if I'm getting through 10, 15% of the time. It's a real embarrassment of our country right now that the IRS is not taking phone calls and claiming that they're overwhelmed with phone calls. I'm sure they are, but all you got to do is increase your staff, and you'll have more than enough people to handle the phone calls that are coming in. But anyway, that's another story, Mikey. And I probably didn't go the direction you wanted me to go again.
Yeah, no, you were headed right there. I had one other thing to add on to that, which is one of the most common CP2000 type letter issues that I've seen is that a taxpayer sends in a tax payment, but maybe they don't mark it up all the way. You know, put on the memo line, you know.
Yeah, we have one right now like that. We have a client that sent in a check, and she did it in her former name with her former address, but she forgot to put her Social Security number on it. And so they cashed the check, but we have no idea where it's going, you know?
Yeah.
So we're working with the IRS, trying to work with the IRS, because I can't get through that easily, you know, trying to figure out where the heck this check is. So anyway, well, Mikey...
Time for callers, but time for traffic.
Well, we have to let everyone know we're on an open show. We have no callers on the line. I guess everybody's abandoned us. 410-922-6680. 410-922-6680. If you want to get online with us, we'd look forward to talking to you after this pause with traffic. Hi, this is Drew Tignanelli of the Financial Consulate, saying a financial advisor must have a tax planning passion. I'm appealing only to those with a net worth of more than $5 million or with taxable income of over $400,000. You are the target for higher and higher taxes. If you're in this elite club, you can no longer afford to have a financial advisor that is not passionate to minimize taxes. I'm appealing to you with income over $400,000 or a net worth greater than $5 million because you are the target and need the Financial Consulate's passion to minimize income taxes and estate taxes. Call to set up your introductory meeting, 410-823-7283 or 410-823-SAVE, or online, financialconsulate.com, if your taxable income is $400,000 or more, or your net worth is over $5 million, you are the target. So call to begin your tax plan, 410-823-7283, or online, financialconsulate.com.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
All right, we're back, Mikey, and
yes,
we're
we
here. Money, Riches, and Wealth. I'm here with Mickey McCarthy, the CEO of the Financial Consulate. I'm just a lowly financial advisor, but he is the CEO of the company.
Don't worry, I'll keep you around.
So anyway, Mikey, what do we got going here?
Well, we have callers on the line. There's two callers on the line, so there's still lots of room in our show for more callers if you want to call in, 410-922-6680. But let's not waste any time and go right to Sally in Pasadena. Sally, you had a question about the IRS?
About younger children who are lucky enough to have great jobs and due to the tax changes, they both of my son and daughter who are married owe tax from last year. And my advice to them was, pay what you got, ask for a payment plan. But I was wondering, what is your advice on that? Is there, I'm not sure, I did not investigate the interest amount that IRS charges. Is there a better way to do that, or to put it on your credit card, or what is your advice? And my advice going forward is, of course, assess before you owe money, but they haven't learned.
Yeah, so the first thing they got to do, Sally, is make sure that their withholdings are in line with what they're expected to owe in taxes next year. So there's a great IRS.
But I think the Social Security issues with Trump making changes and the changes in the last 2 years, they did assess, but I think that's what's caught them, is the tax changes in the last 2 years.
That should have helped them. If your children are younger and they made a good bit of money,
they're making way more money than and the levels that the rates changed in a way that it was not advantageous for them.
That's so, that's unusual.
Three times.
That would have been unusual, but it can happen. So yes, I agree with you that making a payment plan to the IRS is probably going to be your best option, but I don't know what options they have. I don't know if they have equity in a home. I don't know if they have money in a bank account or anything of that sort. So you have to consider all the options that you have, but rarely is a credit card going to be a good option. I think the IRS is the best option.
But they also definitely need to go onto the IRS website and use the withholding calculator and make sure that they don't create a recurring problem year after year that gets them buried.
Yeah.
Thanks. That's great advice.
Yeah, but it's a great
IRS interest rate.
It's 6%, if I'm not mistaken.
That's currently. Okay, good.
Yep, all right.
That's great advice. Yes, sir. Thank you so much.
All right. And there is a great website out there, Mike. It's a IRS withholding calculator, and it does a much better job than it did about 2 years ago. It was horrible 2 years ago, but now it does a much better job, much more thorough in its thought process. And if you have a dual income, it's a great calculator to figure out what you should claim.
And with the new W-4, it's even more complicated. We can maybe talk about that another time, because I don't want Mr. Lee in Towson to wait any longer on his question. Lee, you had a question on beneficiaries?
I understand that many states have a law that will cancel a beneficiary designation to, I guess, the other spouse in the event of divorce. And I think there was a Supreme Court case, and even involving whether that statute was retroactive. I was wondering if Maryland had that law.
I believe Maryland did pass that law. And so what you're talking about is that there was a Supreme Court case about 10 years ago where a person had died and his ex-spouse was the beneficiary of his 401k. Children came in and petitioned that they were the rightful heirs of that 401k. And the ex-spouse came in, their mother came in and said, no, I'm the rightful heir of that money. And they fought it out all the way to the Supreme Court. And Supreme Court said no, beneficiary designations are a legal contract and they can't be broken. And therefore, the mother was the rightful heir to the money. And so in order to prevent a divorce and a mistake of happening where somebody didn't change their beneficiaries, a lot of states like Maryland, and Mike, look that up just to make sure that I'm absolutely right, that Maryland came in and said, no, we're just going to negate, after a divorce, all beneficiary designations for the ex-spouse are negated. And if you want the ex-spouse to be the beneficiary, you have to consciously go back in and redesignate them as the beneficiary. And if you do that, then it will become legally binding, because that's what the Supreme Court argued in that case with the children and their mother, was that in 1989, he had made her the beneficiary. In 1994, they got divorced. And then he died in 2007, and the Supreme Court said, how do we know that he didn't still intend to leave it to her. How do we know that he didn't want her to have that money? And he had 17 or he had 13 years to change the beneficiary designation. So that's why states came back in and said, okay, we're just going to negate it. And now you have to consciously go back in and do it. Did you find that, Mikey?
Well, I may need to do a little bit more digging because I also found something that says federal law trumps any state statute.
Well, no. Maryland, state statute on this is trumping the federal government now. So basically they just negate it. So the Fed said that the beneficiary designation still stands, but if state law negates it, then it does negate it, period. End of the story. Yeah. There is no doubt about that, okay? So anyway, Lee, that's the best I can give you.
Okay, great. Appreciate it.
And Michael clarified, but yeah. I'm almost positive that Maryland passed that law.
Yeah, give me a little bit more time during the show, and if you keep listening, we'll give that answer as long as we're able to.
But we're here on an open show, 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680. We have no one on the line, so if you want to direct the conversation, 410-922-6680, and anything, you know, be it estate taxes, income taxes, IRAs, 401ks, insurances, college planning, you name it. If it has to do with personal finance, we'll be able to help you with it.
Drew, it's like you had a premonition when you said if they want to call in about 401ks, because right now, waiting on the line, we have Steve in Sykesville, and Steve has a question about 401ks. Steve, how can we help you?
Okay, well, actually, my first question is about spousal Social Security. If I were to predecease my spouse and she's entitled to mine, does it do her any good to wait until I would have been 70?
What kind of Social Security benefit did she have? Did she have a lower one than you or a higher one than you?
She'll have a lower one when she finally does take it.
Okay. So what she would do is she could go in at age 60 and start collecting her own. I'm sorry. She could go in at 62 and start collecting her own benefit. But if she's working, they're going to take $1 for every $2 over $19,000 of income, if she's still working. So she would want to make no more than about $19,000 to do that. Once she hits her full retirement age, Steve, the survivor's benefit maxes out. It does not continue to grow as a survivor benefit to the full age 70 maximized benefit. You personally have to live to 70 to do that yourself.
Okay. And my second question is just out of curiosity, in case anybody recognizes my voice. I knew someone who got a divorce, and I wonder how they handle a 401k in a situation like that.
So a divorce is the 401k is to the beneficiary, okay? So if he has beneficiaries down and he's leaving his ex-wife on there, okay, the ex-wife will still get the money unless Maryland does negate the beneficiary designations. I'm almost positive they do, but I'm still waiting for Mikey to clarify that. I might have to do it.
If they do, the Google searching that I'm working on right now isn't going well.
Yeah, well, do they ever say that they don't? Do they say what other states do? I know there's a whole bunch of states that do.
I find tons of articles that are talking about the fact that you got to look at the state statutes, but nothing with a list of states. But, you know, hold on. Have faith.
Yeah, well, I'm not having faith, Mike. You know, I'm waiting for that. So, but anytime somebody gets divorced, they should immediately go in as soon as the divorce is finalized and change all their beneficiary designations on all IRAs, 401ks, Roths, life insurance policies, or anything else that they put a beneficiary designation, especially to the spouse on. So okay,
so they can't basically force him to start withdrawing
no.
in order to stay out.
No, you're saying that the person that's divorced gets portion of the 401k. So it's called a quadro. And your question is, can they force that divorced spouse to start taking the money from the 401k? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, basically that, yeah.
Okay, so the answer is no, they cannot force them to take it, but it may be in their best interest to take it, and there may be in their best interest not to take it, okay? So I'll give you an example. So let's say you're under 59 and a half, and you get a quadro, and you've got, $50,000 in it, all right? I would leave it in the 401k if I feel I might need that money, because there's no penalty if I'm almost entirely positive about this. There's no penalty on taking money from a quadro 401k if I'm under 59 and a half, but there is a penalty if I roll it over to an IRA and start withdrawing from an IRA. So there's different reasons that you would leave it, and there are different reasons you would take it. But then you also have some potential beneficiary designation issues, and a quadro doesn't necessarily give you a guarantee that you're going to have beneficiaries. So, you got lots of different issues.
Steve, would you mind holding for the rest of your questions till after we go to the next traffic break?
Well, those were my questions, but I won't mind holding because I'm walking the dog, and I'd love to continue listening.
All right. Well, we'll address more of it later.
All right.
We're going to traffic.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
We're back, Mikey!
Yep, we still have an open show. We've got Steve. We're going to go back to him in a moment. But, hey, there's no other callers on the line. We got the second half of the show. Your questions could be answered. Others, people want to hear your questions. 410-922-6680. 410-922-6680.
So I actually found that Maryland may not have the global statute to nullify, the divorce.
So you're saying my Google skills are still not terrible.
Saying that I may have had my first failure, but I didn't say absolutely. I said I thought. But from what I'm seeing, Maryland may not have a global statute. There's 23 states to do, but it doesn't seem that Maryland does. So if there isn't a state attorney out there that knows that Maryland does and can let us know, that would be great. 410-922-6680.
Drew, I called two of them that we work with, and they were going to get a free commercial if they could answer the question.
There you go.
But they lost it. Well, listen, while we're waiting for other callers, let's check in on Steve. Steve, are you still walking the dog? Steve. Steven Sykesville has finished his dog walk.
He's finished his dog walk. So, what were we talking about with Lee? With Steve.
Steve, we were talking about the same thing. We were talking about beneficiaries
the beneficiaries and designations. But it's interesting. I thought for sure that Maryland had passed that statute. But what I'm seeing, I don't have anything totally definitive, but. I'm seeing is Maryland may not have yet passed that type of statute.
But definitively.
If you ever get divorced, you want to make sure that you go and change all. As a matter of fact, if you get married, you have to do it. So here's an interesting thing that most people don't realize. Okay, so I've got a $900,000 401k, and I'm marrying, I'm getting married, third wife, let's say. And I'm going to the altar, and I got a prenuptial agreement because I want to leave my assets to my children. She wants to leave her assets to her children. And so they say, okay, well, we'll do a prenuptial agreement. Well, the 401k does not follow the prenuptial agreement. It follows ERISA law, which the minute you say, do you take this person as your lawfully wedded husband or wife? And you say, I do, that's it. They become your beneficiary at that moment in time, no matter what a prenuptial agreement says. And until after they say, I do, you can then go into a back room and say, okay, now sign this piece of paper that says my children are now the beneficiaries of my 401k. Then it's legal. Otherwise, that spouse is 100% the beneficiary of your 401k until they sign off on a legal disclosure saying, I do not want to be the beneficiary of your 401k. Very important, and most people do not realize that.
Well, this is going to be the topic of the night. Another just interesting thing to throw in there is, though, if you are married and you start a new 401k and you want to name someone other than your spouse, in most places, you're going to have to get your spouse to sign off on that.
Yeah, nobody's going to allow somebody other than your spouse to be the beneficiary of a new 401k after you're married.
So we've got John in North Baltimore. John, you had another question about 401k in marriage. How can we help you?
Yeah, you might have almost answered my question. My question was that I had a 401k before I got married. And then once I got married, you know, of course I had an additional 401k, but it's been something like if we get divorced or something, it's something they hang over my head. That, like, if we get divorced, I'm going after your 401k. And I'm like, can you legally do that?
Well, the answer to that is probably not, but it is very difficult or complicated. Oh. Okay. So you had an old 401k, and up to the time that you got married, let's say it was worth $500,000. Technically, you should consider that non-marital asset, okay? But then let's say you get married and that $500,000 grows to $800,000. Well, that next $300,000 easily could be considered a marital asset. Also, the minute you're married, that 401k, if you leave it as a 401k, even though it was before you got married, that 401k, she could easily come back in and say, hey, ERISA qualified plan, I am the beneficiary because he said I do to me. So what I would do with old plans is roll them over to an IRA. Once you roll them over to an IRA, they no longer follow ERISA qualified law, and therefore you can change the beneficiary to anybody you want, and your spouse does not have to be the beneficiary.
Really?
But you do have to worry. You do have to think about Maryland does have a law which is called the marital right. I think that's the term for
yep.
it, Mike. You know, yep. So the marital right. So if I die and I'm married, I have an obligation to leave a portion of my estate to my spouse in order to not leave her or him impoverished. Okay, so and Maryland, I believe, just raised that to 50% from the former 33%. So, you know, it could be a very significant portion. That's why it's a lot of people. I say, you know, prenuptial agreements aren't always about getting divorced. It could also be a lot about estate planning, that if I die after I'm married and I want to leave my assets somebody other than my new spouse because they got plenty of their own assets, then I want a prenuptial agreement to be able to leave it to my children without that spouse being able to come back and ask for a marital right, which could be as much as 50% in the state of Maryland now.
Yeah, that's correct. Like you're saying, it's complicated.
It is complicated. We should have our good friend Farrier Stillman in to talk about. And, you know, Farrier would be the actual best person that we could talk to, Mike, to get an answer
yep.
about whether Maryland accepted the global statute to eliminate beneficiary designations.
All right, John, we appreciate your questions.
Thank you, sir.
So, yeah, it's quite a night of beneficiary talk. I don't want to waste any time. We like to get as many questions as answered as possible, but there's still another quarter of the show after this. So if you have a question you want to call in, there's no one on the lines after this, 410-922-6680. But let's not make Janet wait any longer. Janet and Towson, you had a beneficiary question.
Yes, just an observation to pass on. I had a will drawn up maybe 15 years ago. I since want to update it, and I was told instead of having to do a will all over, I could do codicil, and specify in it what I want changed and have it notarized, and as for beneficiaries, whether it's in life insurance, IRAs, 401, if you stipulate your beneficiaries and you can change them every day, they take precedent over that will.
Sure, absolutely. Beneficiaries always take precedence over the will, and everybody should know that. And titling trumps everything. So in other words, if I put an account in joint name with me and my girlfriend, let's say, and I put my children as my beneficiary, well, my girlfriend gets the account because titling trumps everything. If there is no joint person, then beneficiary trumps the will. And only then, if there's no joint person, there's no beneficiary, only then does the will step in. But I will say one thing, Janet, about a codicil. I'm not a fan of codicils because they can easily get fouled up, misrepresented, lost, not attached to the will properly. If you're going to do a change of your will, I like just a whole completely new straightforward will. And they probably charge you almost as much to do the whole will anyway. So I like a clean, simple will. No codicils. I don't like revocable trust where they have amendment 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. It drives me crazy, you know? So I hear what you're saying, but be careful of doing too many codicils. Maybe one simple one where you're changing your executor. I don't want my brother to be my executor. I want my child, who's now an adult, to be executor. I can see that. All right?
Right. Yeah, all right. You do something like that?
No. We're not attorneys.
Okay.
Even though I was arrested once in Florida for being
false. Let's go. Let's move on. Janet, we really appreciate your question. We got to go.
Come on, Mike. Let's tell the story.
Oh, not. It's traffic time. Sorry.
Take it away, traffic.
Hi, this is Drew Tignanelli of the Financial Consulate, saying a financial advisor must have a tax planning passion. I'm appealing only to those with a net worth of more than $5 million or with taxable income of over $400,000. You are the target for higher and higher taxes. If you're in this elite club, you can no longer afford to have a financial advisor that is not passionate to minimize taxes. I'm appealing to you with income over $400,000 or a net worth greater than $5 million because you are the target and need the Financial Consulate's passion to minimize income taxes and estate taxes. Call to set up your introductory meeting, 410-823-7283 or 410-823-SAVE, or online, financialconsulate.com. If your taxable income is $400,000 or more, or your net worth is over $5 million, you are the target. So call to begin your tax plan, 410-823-7283, or online, financialconsulate.com.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
We're back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're on Open Show, 410-922-6680. And yes, Mikey, when I was 19 years old, down in Florida during spring break, this police officer arrested me for falsely claiming to be a legal attorney in the state of Florida. Now I live in Florida, and they're still looking for me. I'm hiding up here in the corner of Florida. Actually, I was acquitted for that. It was a funny story. Anyway.
Yeah, it was really funny for your father, too. Anyway, listen. Who was a real lawyer, which made it extra special. But listen, Mr. Dennis in Bel Air. Dennis, you have been waiting for 7 minutes and 46 seconds to talk about the IRS. We can't make you wait any longer, even if Drew wants to tell stories.
Go ahead, Dennis.
I didn't realize I was going to be talking to a fugitive, so.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Dennis.
Hey, I've got a question for you. The question is about the IRS. 30 days ago, I received a telephone call from a company that called themselves a collection company or a collection arm of the Internal Revenue Service. Now, I've never had an issue with taxes and never had an issue.
That's a scam.
Thank you.
The IRS never calls. If you haven't received numerous letters from the IRS telling you that you owed money and we're trying to collect that money, then it's a scam and you just don't want to talk to them at all. Don't do anything. Just let everything go off to voicemail, block their calls, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay? Yeah, don't play with them because then they add your number to other blocks of numbers they sell.
Okay, yeah, I made a mistake. They directed me to IRS.gov to update my address because they gave me a portion of an address where letters were sent. And I said to them, you know, in 54 years on this earth, I have never lived at any address that even resembles what you're telling me. And they said, well, you need to update. And then once you update, unless you want to give us your social security number, unless you update your address. We can't give you any more information.
Yeah, that's definitely a scam. If you want to do, you want to know for sure, my friend, just go on to annualcreditreport.com, which is a free, you get a free credit report. Choose one of any of the three credit bureaus, Equifax, Experian, or TransUnion, okay? And look in there and see if there's any judgments or anything that the IRS is trying to collect that's affecting your credit report. If there isn't, then it's absolutely 100% a pure scam. But the IRS never calls. The IRS doesn't ask for your Social Security number. They already know your Social Security number.
Well,
you know.
That was exactly my point to them. Not only did they call me, I said, you want my address.
Let me tell you something, Dennis. These people are so evil that if I were president of the United States, when we catch them, we would hang them in the public square and leave them for the birds to eat their flesh. That's how evil these people are. And they do it to seniors like there's no tomorrow, and they have no remorse for what they do. I mean, these people deserve to be cursed to the ends of the earth. So anyway,
tell us how you really feel.
I'm telling you, I just told you. So go ahead, Dennis. You ignore them totally, please, and stay away from them completely, okay?
Gentlemen, I appreciate it. Thank you very much. Have a good evening.
Thank you,
too. Take care. Bye.
All right. Well, we got one more caller on the line, a little bit of time left in the show, but I will say that I just got off the phone with one of our friendly attorneys. I'm going to save his commercial for another time, but he would know, and he had not heard of a law passed doing that he was aware of.
Huh.
So yeah. When I say doing that, I mean replacing the ex-spouse as a beneficiary after a divorce for the state of Maryland's local statute. But we are going to continue shaking that tree down.
We're going to check that out. Farrier Stillman, of anyone, you know, family law, she'll know absolutely. That's her
They should be a guest. Well, but without making Mr. Jim in Smithsburg waiting longer. Jim, thank you for waiting so long to ask us a question about spouse death benefits.
It's Roseburg. You guys have talked to me before.
Roseburg, Eastern Shore. Great place.
Yeah. I had my 30th anniversary yesterday, and my wife and I were joking around. She says, what am I going to do if you get old and I have to put you in a nursing home? And I said, probably the best way to get rid of me is divorce me.
Well, that is a possibility. Now, it's a little more complicated than that, but it is a theoretical option for elder care planning, okay? But the problem is that if you're conscious, okay, and you can make your own decisions, it could work like a charm. But if you're not, the state can actually step in and force the divorce to go in your favor.
Okay.
So, and now keep in mind that if you're conscious and you divorce, you still have to have a fair settlement. You can't just give her everything and say, we're divorced, and now I'm going to go ask for government benefits.
But the good news...
I mean, there would be like a pretty close to a 50-50 split.
Yeah. If you did that and you were conscious and able to do it, it is a theoretical strategy, unfortunately, you know.
But it doesn't need to be the first strategy. The good news is that there are other strategies.
Go ahead, tell them, Mike. There's some really easy strategies if you're married.
Yeah, I mean, they all have their ups and downs, but one of the ones was that you can theoretically have all of your assets transferred into an immediate annuity for the healthy spouse and then claim for state benefits while that money is all in the annuity and hasn't been paid back. That's one of them. Drew, there's probably more.
Yeah, and the cool thing about that strategy Mike just mentioned is you get to keep your house, you get to keep a car, you get to keep about $130,000 of cash, and then the rest of the money you're putting in this annuity, and within 3 years it all comes back to you and so forth. So that strategy works really well. You want
a
good...
I like that one. One more quick question. She's also about to retire, and I said we have to move out of Maryland. She says in it, how much if we moved out of Maryland to, let's say, Delaware, in taxes would she save percentage-wise?
So that depends on what you're referring to, and it depends on what you own and how much you own and how much money you make and so forth. But let's say you only made about $50,000 a year, And let's say that you, and most of it was in Social Security income, you're really not going to save much in income taxes. You may only save a little bit in property taxes. So your big savings is just going to come from state income taxes because you're never going to pay state sales tax. I'm sorry. I should have said state sales tax, okay? But let's say your income was like $150,000, and let's say you own property worth about $600,000, and you know, and you moved to Delaware. Now you're going to save about 20% on your income taxes. You're going to save about 70 to 80% on your property taxes, and your sales taxes are going to go to zero. So
okay, that's more in the area we are.
Yeah. So then that would be a big win for you, my friend. All right.
And the music plays.
And the music plays. Mikey, we're over. We're finished.
We're finished.
We're done. We're going to find the answer to that question by next week, okay?
I got another attorney called me back. I'm going to call him back in a second.
This is Drew Tignanelli saying God bless. Show them the way you feel. Things are gonna be much better.